Okay, let's now return, please, to item 47. I want to give Commissioner Saltzman a chance to make some opening comments.
Thank you, Mayor. I wanted to speak about why I support bringing this resolution and why I'm urging my colleagues to pursue an appeal in Joseph Walsh v. Bryant Inge. First off, this is not directly about Mr. Walsh. And let me be clear, while we may disagree on much of the business that we conduct here, I absolutely support his and other citizens' rights to testify and express disagreement in these chambers. Secondly, this is not about decorum or hurt feelings. We all know democracy is messy. My staff take in hateful speech of all stripes every week and have a thick skin. But they also have the right to come to work in an environment free of discrimination, harassment, or retaliation of any kind. This is about the precedent of this ruling severely limiting the council's ability to exclude persons for violent, threatening, or intimidating behavior. This ruling should be chilling to everyone, including Mr. Walsh, who should be able to come here and redress their government safely. This appeal is not about limiting free speech, it's about encouraging it. We have had many violent and disruptive things happen in this building and in these chambers. In recent months, an unknown man with a knife menaced city employees near the back steps of this building. There have been telephonic death threats to multiple offices in this building that have gone unprosecuted. I have other examples, but most distressing to me was what happened on November 25th, about 6 weeks ago, in these very chambers. City business was disrupted with shouts and aggressive behavior, furniture being knocked over, and amidst all the screaming and distraction, someone planted a backpack with a beeping smoke detector in it. I don't know if this was a hoax, but I have no doubt the intention was to invoke fear. I support this resolution to square with the reality of our present-day environment. Here and across the country, in our own state, this very moment, dismay with government has reached new levels. And this is the environment that we live in, and while I signed up for it, the employees in the building did not, and neither did the public or members of the press that come here with a reasonable expectation of safety. Recently, a city employee in an email said, "It's very difficult for those of us who have open offices and open doors to feel secure in our building." For this reason, we must absolutely reserve the right to prospectively exclude people from city buildings for valid reasons. Now, I'm not a constitutional scholar, but I served many years with somebody who is. Commissioner Randy Leonard used to sit in the very seat that Commissioner Novick serves in now. And while Randy and I disagreed on a lot of issues, I certainly respect his knowledge of the Constitution and his history. And one thing I learned from him was Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes, in a ruling, said, "Free speech has limits. You don't have the right to cry fire in a theater." And I think that's true for us today as we consider this appeal. We must act to protect and have the ability to control violent, aggressive behavior directed towards us or people who work in this building or our public who comes to these meetings. So I thank you for your consideration. Harry Auerbach and Dan Simon are here, obviously, to provide any perspectives they wish, and I would urge approval.
Please, Council. I don't think I can add much to what Commissioner Saltzman said, so I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Is the ruling about city council meetings or about exclusions from city buildings?
It's fairly broad, actually, and I'll let Dan speak about that a little. But basically, the ordinance you have, the city code provision, authorizes the mayor or his designee to exclude person from city property, and that ordinance has been enjoined in its entirety to prohibit prospective exclusions.
That's correct, Commissioner Fritz, members of the council. What the decision of the judge in that case was that the code provision as written is unenforceable. So at this point, there is an injunction granted against the entire enforcement of that provision.
So it seems to me those are two different things, that people expressing their views, however loudly and potentially obnoxiously in city council, is different from threats of violence, either in council chambers or in city offices. And I'm wondering if appeal could be, either the appeal could be narrowed, or could we quite quickly change city code to distinguish between those two things?
I think the answer to your question is yes, both parts. I don't think anybody, certainly the judge didn't suggest that you can't exclude people from your meetings when they disrupt your meetings. The only issue is, if somebody disrupts your meeting today, do you have to let them come back and disrupt your next meeting before you exclude them again?
That's not my question. My question is for somebody who threatens violence.
Right. And we will certainly make that argument.
Does the ruling encompass both scenarios?
Yes, the ruling simply prohibits you from enforcing that ordinance at all.
My contention would be that somebody losing their temper today doesn't necessarily indicate they're going to lose it again next week. But whereas somebody who says, I'm going to kill you no matter how long it takes, should indeed have some time where they're not coming in on a daily basis to tell me that they're going to kill me.
Right, and I understand that, and we will certainly make that argument. The thing I would say is that it is true that one person might simply have a bad day today, and if excluded on day one may get the hint and conform his or her behavior the next time around. Some people, frankly, don't do that, and you wind up having to serially exclude people who come in and disrupt your proceedings frequently.
Well, we do, but that's disruption, and that's disrespectful to other citizens who might be waiting to testify, but it's not a threat of danger. So does our code currently allow us to exclude people prospectively who are dangerous?
Yeah, it does, except it allows you to exclude people who violate the rules of conduct established for city buildings, and those include disruptive, threatening, violent behavior, among other things.
Could the council establish a policy that we uphold free speech, and although we are concerned about disruption of council meetings because of that impact on other citizens, that that will be subject to exclusion for the day, whereas for people who have threatened bodily harm to us or city employees, we may continue to exclude for certain periods of time?
We are happy to review the code and propose amendments that will accomplish that for you. We will do that. We would prefer to have to – well, we think it's in your interest. Let me say this. This is your decision. They're your meetings. It's your ordinance. So what you do about it is up to you. It's not up to me. But our advice is that you should do that on a parallel track with an appeal of this decision, because we think the consequences for you are significant.
Similar to the previous one, is there a particular timeline by which we have to appeal?
Yes, the appeal must be filed by the end of the month. It's 30 days from the date of the judgment. So
it's not as immediate as the previous one, where we had 7 days.
It's not as immediate as the public records one.
Thank you.
So let me make sure I understand the judge's ruling. That is, under the judge's ruling, our ability to both exclude people for disruptive behavior in council chambers and to exclude people for threatening behavior are both encompassed by this decision? The judge made no distinction between those two scenarios?
Well, let's ask the lawyer who argued the case.
No, he did not, Mayor Ailes.
Okay.
Did we make that distinction?
We attempted to, Commissioner Fisher.
Well, let me ask you a question. If someone engages in disruptive behavior in a courtroom, what's the judge's recourse?
Well, as Dan pointed out in the briefing in this case, the judge can exclude a person from the courthouse. We cited to Judge Simon, a case from his own court in which another judge had upheld the exclusion of a person from the Washington County Courthouse who persistently disrupted proceedings in the courthouse, and that was upheld.
Okay, that's for disruptive behavior, but to Commissioner Fritz's point, when it goes beyond just disruptive speech to conduct which is threatening, doesn't that violate other law? And we're talking about this tool of using exclusion, but if someone threatens bodily harm, I mean, don't we have laws around assault and battery and attempted harm and things, and can't they also be prosecuted?
They can. And in fact, I believe there is such a prosecution arising against at least one individual out of the events that Commissioner Salzman was referring to from November. That whether that is, yes, they can.
Harry, does this ruling, and I'm just a little unclear about the scope of this ruling, does this ruling prevent the city from issuing exclusions to people in other settings, like parks and other purposes?
This ruling does not. The ruling is directed only against the provision in Title III. The ruling does not affect the park exclusion code, which is in Title 20.
And the consequence of this ruling is that if Citizen X comes in and is disruptive and ignores the mayor's admonition and is warned, Citizen X can be excluded from the meeting but can come back next week.
That is correct.
Or next day.
Or the next day.
We may have some disagreement about that, but yes. Depends on how you define meeting.
So let's talk about the case law for a second. I asked you this question when we met yesterday. Has any court squarely addressed this question?
In the sense of public meetings, prospective exclusions have not specifically been addressed that I could find.
That's correct.
The Supreme Court of the United States has held that you can prospectively exclude people from public forums, streets and parks, for violating rules of conduct, for violating law, for non-speech related purposes. So our belief is that that rule should hold in this public forum as it does as it did in the Virginia versus Hicks case from the Supreme Court.
If the council chose to change its code to build in, let's say, a escalator clause so that there's a difference between the first disruption and chronic disruption and it's cumulative, do you believe, based on the judge's ruling, that would have that could have an impact on at least how Judge Simon views this case?
Well, if we were to pursue that course, we would then probably go back and ask Judge Simon to lift the injunction. I do not pretend to be able to read Judge Simon's mind, and I don't know whether he would then believe that we had sufficient protections, whether that would then pass constitutional muster or not, but I do think it would enhance its defensibility if we had to go further to the Ninth Circuit.
And what's your general view on the following question? Under our Constitution, the state Constitution, we have a very broadly written First Amendment, and it's quite unique, actually, in compared to a lot of other states. Do the federal courts accord more protection for what's purely speech or for speech that crosses the line into something that's unlawful and therefore constitutional criminal protections attach?
I'm not quite sure I follow the question.
So speech that is not protected speech because
right.
it involves threats of violence and other
right.
things is looked at one way by the courts.
Right, that's correct.
Pure speech is looked at another way. Which is entitled to greater protection?
Well, pure speech. I mean, so there's the First Amendment. The courts have interpreted the First Amendment to protect most speech but there is some speech that historically has been held to be unprotected, actual threats primarily, clear and present danger is the test the courts used. Both the federal courts and the Oregon courts recognize that the government can impose some limits on free speech. They just depend. They analyze them somewhat differently, although I think less differently than they used to. They analyze them somewhat differently, but basically recognize that the government has legitimate interests that sometimes require it to impose limitations of one kind or another on the time, manner, and place in which people speak. But we don't regulate the subject matter of people's speech. We try to avoid all kinds of content-based restrictions primarily.
There doesn't seem to be a claim in this case that any action taken by the city was a pretext for punishing speech, the content of speech. Is that correct?
Right. Mr. Walsh can speak to that himself.
Well, issued a ruling.
But no, there was no contention of – there was no – the judge found that your ordinance is, in fact, content neutral.
All right.
So are we currently continuing to exclude people who have been threatening to anybody?
I do not know what people are actually doing. I think our advice is not to until we get this clarified, at least under the Title III code.
Does the ruling apply to the city council or to our delegates as well? Because my understanding is, for example, that the Office of Neighborhood Involvement being right by the entrance of City Hall occasionally helps folks who are having some significant difficulties.
No, it applies to the city as a municipal corporation. All of us.
Okay, thank you.
So, Harry, just to be clear about the options before us today, we can support this resolution, we can oppose the resolution. We have until January 29th actually to decide the question, so we could continue this discussion if the council wanted to see whether there's a broader consensus around one approach or another. And then there's a related question about whether, linked to this appeal or independently, we want to take a look at revising our code to address some of the concerns that the council has and the court has. Is that correct?
Yes.
If we were to appeal it, would that stay the judge's order?
I believe we would have to move for a stay, and we could certainly do that. I don't know if he would grant one or if the Ninth Circuit would grant one if he denied it. But it would not. I'll go back and double check. But my belief is it would not automatically stay the ruling.
So I could support some version of this that is amended to talk about clear and present danger. As opposed to what's stated in it right now, which addresses almost entirely speech within the council chamber. I wasn't aware that this decision also applied to the safety of our employees. So at the very least, I'd like to carry it over so that we could work on amending the language so that when we appeal to the judge, it's clear that and I think we need to have some more conversation about and hear from the public in terms of what their view is as to how to keep city employees safe versus their right to make our lives as unpleasant verbally as they would like to do.
I'm interested in that as well. There are two, as this discussion has illustrated and Dan's remarks highlighted, there are two really separate questions here. One is, how do I or any other presiding officer in this chamber deal with obnoxious behavior in the chamber in which somebody monopolizes the room for their own speech making or otherwise doesn't follow the rules? That's one issue. And there needs to be a process by which people are excluded who are not letting other people speak. That can be episodic or that can have some duration. That's one question. The other question is, if there are people who need to be excluded because they're dangerous or potentially dangerous, that's a completely separate matter to me. We need to address both. We don't need to necessarily address both with the same ordinance language. So it seems to me that ordinance repair is in order regardless of what we do with this appeal, but that we need to fix our ordinance so that we lay down more clearly, and we'll go defend that once we've debated it, heard from the public, and adopted whatever process we need to operate under in this chamber so that people can be heard and that people aren't rude, obnoxious, or dilatory in taking over the room for their own agenda versus letting us conduct the public business and hear from people in some kind of order. That needs to be resolved. The judge has said the way we do that now is not acceptable. Fine, let's fix that. And I don't know whether we have to fix that by going to court or by working on our ordinance. Secondly, if the judge's ruling is so sweeping that it invades the common sense matter of making sure that people that are issuing violent threats aren't routinely allowed into a building that doesn't otherwise have perimeter security, like most government buildings have, then that's a serious problem. And other government agencies respond to that potential threat by having metal detectors and such at their doors, and we in this city, at least for now, have not. So we got to address that question, and Commissioner Saltzman is right to highlight it, and it's important. But those are very different matters, and I guess those are my feelings about the issue. I'm interested in having this discussion today, in having further discussion at the council level, and then deciding on the resolution. But I'm also interested in getting some work started and some discussion started about our ordinance.
We'll do that.
We might need a better ordinance to defend in court than the one we apparently
Mayor
are
Hales,
operating
on. I appreciate your comments, and I appreciate Commissioner Fritz's comments. I had a chance to meet with council yesterday afternoon and then got some follow-up information. And the thing that I've struggled with is a lack of clarity about what we're approaching, and in the context of a very important set of questions governed ultimately by the First Amendment. So just to give you an analogy, if this was not fully baked but was a routine policy question that came before council, we would all vote just the way we felt about it, and if there's a split vote, so be it. This is a little different. This goes to how we do our business as a body, in which case our general rule is we seek consensus. We seek to find the broadest possible support. Second, it's governed under a very high bar, a standard set under the Constitution that Judge Simon addressed. And one of the concerns that I've had is, absent that broader discussion and understanding all the options, and with the First Amendment being the touchstone, my inclination would be to vote no if I couldn't be persuaded. So the additional time to find out if we can narrow this or come up with a strategy that gets at the real problem is helpful for me because my default would be to go the other way, and I would I am very appreciative of Commissioner Saltzman's comments about safety, public safety, and that's different than pure speech.
Right. Exactly. Okay. Other questions, comments, concerns raised with staff? Let's take testimony.
I just want to thank Commissioner Novick for his defense of city employees. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Who's signed up to speak, please?
We've got six people signed up. The first three, please, coming up are Joe Walsh, Matt Dos Santos, and Craig Rogers.
Go ahead, Joe.
My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice, and I am the plaintiff in this case. I am amazed that it was obvious that many of you did not read this decision, because you don't know what the judge said. It's very simple. It's 28 pages long, but it's simple. A politician cannot sit in his office and make a decision to exclude somebody that he doesn't like. That's it. Because if you look at the timeline, when I was thrown out, a week later, I was served with the papers. So it's kind of like getting me twice. You throw me out, you threaten me with arrest, and then you exclude me for 60 days. That was arrogant. That was obnoxious. That had nothing to do with people fearing for their safety, Commissioner. There is nothing in the record. And I really resent you saying that. Point to the record. Outside of one person giving testimony to the G4S people, and that was the Business Alliance representative who really disliked me. Because I dislike them. And they know it. And they said, oh, I was really terrified. So I had a security guard take me to the front door. And where was Mr. Walsh? He was on the street. So how could she be so terrified if I wasn't even in the building and she had to pass me in the street? There is nothing in the record. I am a very nonviolent person. Mouthy, obnoxious, pushy. I'll take those because that's what activists do. We don't look for making friends. I once told that to Commissioner Fritz. I don't want to be your friend. I want you to put your head down when I walk into this council and say, oh, damn, that's what I want. That's what a good activist does. I'm not an advocate. I'm not a diplomat. I throw rocks. And, Mayor, you do not have dictatorial powers. Sorry. Not only Joe Wall says that, but Judge Simon says that. And if you want to appeal this case, Commissioner Salzman, you're going to get egg all over your face because there is not a court in the land that would appeal or give you the decision that you want in the First Amendment. And you all, the lawyers have it wrong. It's not free speech. That's part of the First Amendment. It's the last part that I have a right to come here and yell at you. It's called petitioning for grievances. I have a right to do that. The Constitution says I have a right to do it. It's not some backroom deal that you can do, Mayor. And I sent you a request in the beginning of this whole process for settlement. And you know what I asked for? A public apology and all exclusions from the City Hall building stopped. That's what I asked for. What did the judge say? Permanent injunction stopped. Will you give me an apology? No, because you don't have the ability to do it.
Thank you. Next.
Good morning, commissioners, council. My name is Craig Rogers, and before the street fee, I'd rarely appear down here at City Council, but I've been getting a little bit more dialed in. And after a while, I began to understand that coming events cast their shadows before them. And I felt that, regrettably, some members of council, under certain circumstances, were not all advocates of the right to vote or freedom of speech. So here we are now with a First Amendment issue. And I feel that in the case of Mr. Walsh, it's somewhat making a mountain out of a molehill. And this is going down a road that I don't think we should continue. And what it reminds me of is when Tip O'Neill, Speaker of the House, said this of Nixon. He's a lousy president, but he'd make a hell of a king.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Matt Dos Santos, and I'm the legal director of the ACLU of Oregon. Thank you for allowing me to speak here this morning. It will likely come as no surprise that we're here today to urge you not to vote for Resolution 47. We think that U.S. District Court Judge Michael Simon got it right when he held it unconstitutional under the First Amendment to exclude members of the public from future city council meetings. The city of Portland has long sought to have its democratic process open and accessible to all members of the Portland community. And we think that this kind of exclusion hurts the city of Portland by creating barriers of access and transparency. We acknowledge that for the government to work, it may be appropriate to remove a disruptive person temporarily from city council proceedings. The ACLU doesn't believe that free speech should trump the city council being able to do its work safely. But there are options other than long-term prospective exclusions. In fact, Judge Simon covered this very point in his opinion when he said, like judges in their courtrooms, Mayor Hales has the continuing ability to maintain decorum in council meetings by ordering a disruptive individual immediately to leave the city council chambers. Maintaining decorum does not, however, require prolonged and prospective exclusions from a forum intended for a public discourse and debate. I would also add that we are not aware of any appellate decision favoring the city's case, so the city will have a long uphill battle, especially at the Ninth Circuit. For these reasons, we hope that you will not pass this resolution to appeal the U.S. District Court decision. And although we haven't been involved in this case at the trial level, it would be fair to assume that the ACLU of Oregon has a strong interest in any future legal proceedings. Thank you.
Mr. Nocentos, I totally agree with what you just said, and I respect everybody's right to come in and be as disruptive as they want for 3 minutes and as often as they want. Could you address the second part of the concern about safety and people who are actively threatening to hurt us or city employees, and whether a prospective restriction on their visiting city offices in that case might actually be better for them than prosecuting them for those threats?
So I appreciate your sentiment there, and I certainly don't want to add to the criminalization of anyone in the city of Portland. I think that a simple fix to the ordinance would create exactly what you're trying to do, which is to identify, as I think Mayor Hales stated, a distinction between something like city council meetings where people are disruptive and stuff that creates an actual threat. That is not protected by the First Amendment, has never been. And I think it was Commissioner Saltzman who made reference to the screaming fire in a theater. That kind of thing is not protected by the First Amendment. So here, while the judge's order may strike down that ordinance, the ordinance is too broad. And I think there's a quick fix and a way to resolve that without undoing Judge Simon's order.
I really appreciate what you just said, because I was looking at some notes that Harry gave me about a Supreme Court case that seems to apply. So what we're essentially saying is that if we come up with a tailored rule which focuses on non-expressive conduct, we're out from under the First Amendment, and now it's just a question about how reasonable we are in implementing. Is that fair?
I think that's a fair statement.
And the case that I guess is in the opinion is the Virginia versus Hicks case,
mm-hmm.
where the Supreme Court upheld a permanent bar from someone from coming into a court, and made a distinction between non-expressive conduct that was threatening and disruptive, and speech, and then also identified alternative ways that someone could still participate, either electronically or through surrogates. So I appreciate the advice you've given us to take a look at narrowing our statute, our code, so that it captures the non-expressive conduct, clearly not covered by the First Amendment, where we might want to use consider using an exclusion in lieu of the heavy hand of a criminal prosecution to someone who's engaging in not just annoying speech, but legally unprotected speech.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that there's an important distinction between a courtroom and a city council chamber, which I think you'll run up against if you litigate this case further. So, I mean, take that for what you will, because obviously I can't also read the tea leaves of what the Ninth Circuit will say, but courts have historically treated courtrooms differently than they've treated city meetings.
Article 3 judges just have a sense that their lives are worth a little bit more than the random legislator.
Perhaps.
There you go.
So, Mr. DeSantos, appreciate your testimony. So going back to the real situation we experienced on November 25th, a backpack with a smoke detector in it left in the chambers. What should be the consequence for that behavior? See you tomorrow? I mean, you're gone for the rest of the day, but we'll see you tomorrow.
So I think that the judge addresses this when he talks about things that are, let me backpedal a little bit. There are a couple of tiers here that we're talking about. We're talking about actual disruptions at a meeting, something like someone screaming out and preventing people from talking. And
you think those should be regulatable?
Yeah, right? Those are regulatable in the moment.
Say, completely hypothetical situation. Someone
right.
Laying on the floor of the council chambers, mooing loudly, prohibiting other people from speaking, you would regard that as behavior that it would be reasonable for us to regulate.
Yeah, I think
and
you
perhaps
could.
Perhaps exclude someone for doing that.
I think you could. For that day.
For the day.
Okay,
for that day. Something like creating a bomb threat, I don't think you'd find a court that would protect that as speech. You know, there may be an instance where there is some kind of, I mean, look, I can get into hypothetical situations with you where there may be some instance where someone is creating some kind of artistic installation or something along those lines. But what you just described sounds pretty threatening. And I think that, you know, you could have a cogent argument that that is not protected speech. And so that actually wouldn't come under the auspice of this order. That would be a completely separate thing that you could handle regardless of what Judge Simon said.
I mean, that's a little different from what our attorneys told us, but appreciate your opinion.
I would like to make a final comment since I am the person involved in this. Your example, Commissioner Salzman, has nothing to do with me. Please keep it to me, because that's what this case is about.
No, we can't do that because we have to change our ordinance, so it won't justify.
No, you don't have to do anything right now. You may have to change your ordinance between now and next week. But I'm saying, if you say to me, well, Mr. Walsh, you know, you're very disruptive, and we just had an explosion in Iraq and killed three people, and we have to do something. That's the connection you're making. I had nothing to do with that. And as Judge Simon said in his decision, there is nothing in the entire record that your city attorney submitted, which was mounds, that shows, number one, that I was threatening. Number two, that the worst possible thing that I said in foul language was I was pissed off. That's it.
Mr. Walsh, the case is about you. The ruling is about all city exclusions, including for safety.
You brought that on yourself. When I went to federal court, you brought that on yourself. And if you vote on this to take it to the Ninth Circuit, and you can ask the ACLU this, it'll affect nine states.
I understand.
You'll make me a folk hero in nine states, and I'm too old for that.
You're already a folk hero.
Thank you.
That in nine states.
Well,
do you realize if you lost this case, how many lawyers would have to read it and say, what does that mean?
Thank you. Okay.
Next three are David Keith Davis, Nancy Newell, and Robert West.
Okay, come on up. Go ahead, Mr. Davis.
Why does he leave every time I start to speak? I don't know what's up with that.
It go seems ahead and speak.
Like, you know, So, Dan Saltzman, you were arguing like City Hall is a safe space or something, that you can just exclude people for any type of speech that you don't like, or you have anything to say about that?
You're acting
like someone saying some naughty words is a bomb threat. Like, what is this... Can you give us some more information on this person who supposedly left a backpack with this beeping?
Mr. Davis, you need to testify, not cross-examine council members. So go ahead.
I'm allowed to do
testimony.
Whatever I want, actually.
But we're allowed to not answer, so go ahead.
Yeah, I already know you guys are slimy and corrupt. That's what this whole thing is about. And it's all about limiting free speech at City Hall. It's not about your personal safety, because some guy had a knife outside of City Hall a month ago or something? Sorry, that's not even in the building, okay? You can talk about, yeah, there was a gun. Wasn't there someone stabbed outside of City Hall a while ago? Yeah, too. Well, you know, you didn't bring up that either. You talk about, oh, someone left a backpack with a smoke detector and, you know. Well, let's hear more about this. I want to hear you guys actually, let's see the surveillance footage, you know? I mean, let's see the altered surveillance footage of you guys when I got arrested with Barry Joe Stull on November 25th. You're talking about this November 25th issue. Well, what happened was there was a man in mental crisis mode, Barry Joe Stull, who's actually the guy who gave Joe Walsh the idea to appeal this thing to a federal judge, okay? So I don't know if you guys know that or not, but I think Barry Joe Stull was targeted by you guys and taken out of the council chambers. Amanda Fritz, you're a registered psychiatric nurse. You have plenty of experience dealing with mentally ill people. And you know Barry Joe Stull. And what did you do? You did not call the behavioral health unit. You did not call any ambulance. What you did do is you ordered G4S security goons to clear the chambers, and then Todd Engstrom, a known instigator cop, showed up and proceeded to throw haymakers on Barry Joe Stull. So that, you guys need to release Barry Joe Stull out of prison. Go to the YouTube video, Portland's Abysmal Treatment of Journalists and the Mentally Ill. This is about excluding activists.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Davis. Time's up.
Voices of dissent at City Hall. This is not about your personal safety, and you know it. You don't want the lies and corruption and all this other stuff exposed that's actually going on here, and you don't want to be ridiculed by the general public.
Okay, thank you. We're going to let the rest of the public speak now. Ms. Newell, you're next.
You guys are corrupt.
Mr. Davis, you've used your time. We got a citizen next to you who gets to speak now. Mr. Davis, you're done. Thank you. Ms. Newell, go ahead.
Are we starting over?
Go ahead, yes.
Yeah, I'm Nancy Newell. I want that on record. It's interesting that you quote the Supreme Court as a decision, and I would be very curious what we suffered during the Reagan as well as the Bush administration and the changes in our Supreme Court. So many of the rulings are really oppressive to public discourse, characterizing people as terrorists rather than citizens trying to protect rights that were established at the founding of our country. So I understand your feelings about safety. We ride buses, we ride trains, we de-escalate. You would be so proud of citizens doing de-escalation and trying to get to work and trying to get home, or women at night being subjected, and I have been subjected to police action just because I'm a woman on the streets and I'm in question. So these are very critical rights for people to function in their daily lives. And you're the protection of that, and you're the protection, I understand, of your own safety. But there's a limit to how much you should be acting on and still protecting the very basis of what this country is founded on. So I think Judge Simon has been very helpful in this latest decision, protecting First Amendment rights. There are a lot of things that the public can disagree on, because if you're taking 3/4 of Americans are now paycheck to paycheck, 3/4 of Americans close to homelessness. I understand the pressures that you're under. I understand the limitations of funds that you have. But we really have to work better on de-escalation rather than removing people's civil rights. That doesn't work, and it'll just come back at you with more violence and more violent society. We create way too many instruments of attacking people in our own streets, just regular citizens. So I would like to see remedies and some positive actions from this council to get better results in those protections. Thank you.
Thank you. Morning.
Okay.
Put your name back in the record.
Okay, my name is Robert West. I am, like, totally against appealing this. Number one, everyone's talking safety and stuff like that, the backpack and stuff. That's what the police are for, okay? If someone's in here threatening someone with a gun, you call the police. You don't exclude them for 30 days. If someone comes in here with a bomb, you call the police. You don't exclude them for ever. Once the case goes to court, the judge can decide how long, or if the person can never come back or something like that. As far as threatening people that work inside the building, that can be handled through anti-stalking or restraining orders or stuff like that. You know, if someone feels that they're in danger, they've been threatened a few times, they can go get an anti-stalking order. If a judge sits there and says, well, you can't go around this person, you can't go around where they work. Okay. There's other, I mean, you're throwing all these things. Well, yeah, there's a smoke detector and a backpack. Okay, fine. That's illegal. Okay. I see all these cameras all over the place. Well, you know, the courts have ruled several times that, you know, video evidence can be used in court. That can persuade a jury. If I threw a backpack right here and said there was a bomb in it, right, and I took it to a jury trial, there's a camera there, and there, then there's probably a few cameras that I haven't even seen. I have G4S security on both sides. Right, that would be convincing to a jury if they sat there and seen that on videotape. If someone threw something at someone in here, I would expect the police to be called. So my issue with you guys arguing security, you're just looking for reasons to appeal what the Judge Simon says. Okay. Keith Davis right here, sitting over here videotaping, is not grounds for exclusion for 60 days. Just because someone doesn't like what someone said or they go over their time, that's not worthy of a 30-day exclusion. You're punishing people for doing stuff that they have a constitutional right to do. And that's what the judge sat there and said. Excluding someone for 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, permanent, that is punishment. That is not a cool-down period. A cool-down period is, hey, you're out. You know, if you come back and you do it again, then you're out that day.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Okay. I was permanently excluded.
The last person who signed up is Charles Johnson.
Okay, come on up.
My camera.
I'll wait for my mic. Thank you.
There you go.
Good morning, City Council members. My name is Charles Johnson. And contrary to what Commissioner Schaltzman is saying, the Reichstag fire did not happen on November 29th right here. What happened is that a political prisoner was created. I'm telling you again, the five of you created political prisoner. His prisoner number is 135-7219. He's in jail right now. Barry Joe Stull, a man who was obviously engaged in a mental health crisis, and now the county has been paying correctional costs for him because this city cannot live up to its duties under the United States of America versus City of Portland, the consent decree you're in. So this smokescreen of safety, I think, is something that every one of you has seen through, and you will choose to not pursue this appeal. This council has serious problems that are germane to this case. 1 week ago, right here, on agenda item number 7, you violated your own printed policy on the agenda and suppressed public input on the City Club's report. It says on your own paperwork that public comment is taken on all items except communications and second readings. So part of me wants you to appeal this to the Ninth Circuit so that the 40 attorneys I previously mentioned, who collectively are responsible for about $4 million or more in salary, can be crapped on again by the Ninth Circuit, telling them that they're not doing it right. So, the other thing that's happening that is an insult to everybody who voted for you or against you, is that instead of fixing the real problem, your crappy public comment and protection exclusion policies, you're rushing off to the Ninth Circuit saying, save us, court. Do some hard work, earn your money, fix the city ordinance. Voila! That is the problem here, is that in the entire 3 years that I've been coming to these Portland City Councils, we keep telling you your public comment policy is crappy and ineffective compared to what the county has. You need to partner that with fixing this ordinance. You need to let people come every week. If they present a threat to public safety, there's huge books of Oregon statutes that pertain to public safety. Even Mr. West pointed out, there are stalking laws. There are laws that can protect you. But do not rush into a flawed, doomed-to-fail appeal based on the fact that on the 25th, you brought G4S goons in and police to rough up a mentally ill person, and then when those people are in jail, surprise, surprise, their backpacks remain in the building. This was not a wise form to raise the issue of possibly a smoke detector beeping in a backpack as a possible hoax bomb threat on a day when y'all cleared the chambers because Mr. Barry Joe Stahl, who's now a political prisoner, was having a mental health episode that, as of today, is still not being properly treated. Get Judge Nan Waller to release him on Friday when they have court. Thank you.
Thank you. Morning.
Yes, my name is Lightning. I represent Lightning, the Watchdog PDX. I'd like to ask for this to be a continuance on this at least till January 29th. I think there definitely needs to be more discussions on this issue. Another problem I'm having, again, is on understanding on what your definition is going to be for being disruptive, what your definition is going to be for being considered a public safety issue. I want to have a clear understanding exactly what you mean when you make those statements, what your definition is of a backpack with a fire alarm in inside of it, what that means to you opposed to me. It's just a backpack with a fire alarm. But you consider that a public safety issue. Again, I want to have a clear understanding on your definitions when you're making those statements. Another thing that I believe I stand for and want to make a stand for is, of course, I want to have people have the right to come in and speak, come in and do their speeches, come in and try to relay their ideas, their concerns, and not feel as though they don't have a right to do that in the council chambers. This is the place to do that. This is the place to look at people and say, I disagree with you. This is my idea. This is my opinion. I'm going to sit here and say it, and I don't need to be removed out of the council chambers. I don't need to feel like I don't have the right to come in here. Don't feel like I have the right not to be in here and be welcomed in here because someone else is going talking to you in a soft manner and maybe going to special committee meetings and various things like that. I come in here to do my speeches in front of the council members because I feel I have a right to do that. And if you feel you have a right not to allow me to do that, I think that's being challenged right now. And I think really that's what Joe Walsh is standing up for, the right to be able to do that. And realistically, he's never been threatening. Realistically, people can claim he's threatening, but, you know, they still need to prove that. They haven't proved anything. They are escorted out by security. Means nothing. Means absolutely nothing. And again, I feel that he has had his freedom of speech and what he wants to say in here limited and restricted. And who has that right to do that? If this isn't the place to stand up and stress what we want to say, where is it? Where is the place to do that? And it comes under open meetings law. It comes under exactly what we're challenging right now, Federal Judge Simon. And this is going to get very complicated, and there's going to be a lot of issues pertaining to this. This is a very complicated issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Mayor, I have a proposal.
Okay.
I should address myself to the sponsor of the resolution. Dan, I have a proposal. I asked Harry Auerbach, what's the deadline for filing an appeal, and he said it's January 29th, and that is a ministerial function. It's a notice of appeal. It doesn't require the appeal. That means we have up to 2 weeks to consider whether the appeal is the right route or whether a change in the code along the lines that the ACLU suggested is a more tailored approach. And I would just urge Mayor, we and Dan, we set this over for 2 weeks. we confer with city attorney, maybe even invite the ACLU to help us, and then decide whether we want to pursue the appeal and or whether there's an amendment to our code which more strategically gets at the concern of the council. And since we have the 2 weeks and we have Martin Luther King's birthday on Monday, I would urge us to take the full 2 weeks to get it right.
Well, I'm certainly amenable to that. I guess my preference would be to, and we can deal with this in 2 weeks, but is, as Harry Auerbach suggested, we pursue a parallel track of the appeal and appropriate code changes. So I think we'll have some time to consider that and mull that over in the 2 weeks.
That's what I would like to do as well. I won't be here next week. I will be here on the 27th, so I'm going to continue this.
Are we all here, Carla, on the 27th as far as?
Yes, I show everyone in.
Yeah.
I actually might not be.
Uh-oh. All right.
And I should say that I'm inclined to vote against the appeal because I think that the safety issue is a different issue, and it sounds like maybe we need to make some targeted changes to the code, perhaps, to focus on that. But I think that we should accept Judge Simon's ruling as to our current ordinance, and I don't think this would be a good case to address the safety issue because Mr. Walsh, as he points out, is not a safety threat. He's not dangerous. He's simply boring, and the First Amendment does protect the boring.
So, go ahead, Commissioner Fritz.
I concur with that. I was also going to vote against the resolution because it wasn't clear from the resolution that the other issue of safety was also concerned, and I believe we can more expeditiously get to where we need to be. I think the right response for disruptive behavior is to be excluded for the rest of the council session that week, rather than for a prospective 30 days or 60 days. I would also note as a former community activist that one often does better by being calm and measured in one's testimony rather than yelling, and that's completely up to the choice of the activist. I also respect the right of other citizens who come to talk about either on the same issue or others to have their turn to talk before the council gives up in exhaustion. So I would just want to put that on the record and still absolutely uphold people's right to say and do things however they wish for the 3 minutes as long as it doesn't involve a safety fire.
So I want to concur with that comment as someone who was raised in the South by a woman who never raised her voice in my entire life. I've always been persuaded by thoughtfulness and never by rudeness, though some people in the public arena never seem to notice that, in at least my case, that the best way to my heart and to my head is thoughtful argument, not yelling. But yelling is protected, at least within time limits. So we'll certainly always give people the opportunity that feel like they want to yell a chance to do so. But we need to proceed on this set of questions. I want to set this over for 2 weeks and convene a working group, as Commissioner Fish has suggested, of the city attorney's staff, council staff, and I do want to invite the ACLU to participate and see what our options are with respect to ordinance changes. Then we can return to the question of whether an appeal still makes sense as a parallel track or not. But I don't know whether we need to appeal or not, but I do know we need to change our code. That much I've learned already in this discussion. So I want to set this over until the 27th, convene that working group, and give both council offices, the city attorney staff, and others who are interested in the question of what should be reasonable rules of conduct here and what should be reasonable grounds for excluding people who are a threat. I do believe that, and as Commissioner Saltzman has articulated this, there's a level of threat in a public building that maybe doesn't rise to a criminal act, but nevertheless needs to be regulated. Again, other public buildings, including Judge Simon's chambers, are protected by things like metal detectors, which we don't currently operate at the Portland building or here. So I think there's a reasonable grounds for regulation of conduct, including threatening conduct like the one that you described. So I think there's work to be done here, and there's a place where most reasonable people will agree, and I think we can get there in 2 weeks. And I look forward to returning to this discussion then. Okay, let's move on.